Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate y'all hanging around for just a little bit longer. This presentation is going to be fairly short. The one a little bit later on has got a lot more meat to it. So I thought about a few things just to get started. The last time I was at the Beltwide, and many of you don't really care about this, but I'm going to go through it anyway, was 1993, so that was 17 years ago. And I've heard a lot of conversation today about there's no peanuts up here, which is fine. We've just got a weed scientist vacuum at NC State right now, so that explains why I'm standing up here. But way back in 1993, there were a number of things that were different in cottonweed management, and I just wrote a few of these out. If you go back to that particular Beltwide, most cotton growers up to that point, the big thing they wanted to do, at least in the Mid-South and Southeast, was to make sure they got a height differential between cotton and weeds. So residual weed control was extremely important. And at that time, there just weren't any post-emergence over-the-top options other than Cotteran and MSMA. So I think Larry was quoted a while ago as saying that the era of post-emergence over-the-top weed control in cotton is over, and at least to a certain degree. And that was, if you go back 17 years ago, there was a lot of hope that over-the-top weed control would be really, really important, and it has been for quite a number of years now. If you go back to that point in time, BXN cotton showed a lot of promise back in 1993. Staple didn't even have a name at that time, I don't think. Maybe it already had, but it was pretty close, had just been named. Command had a big fit in cotton production systems from a residual control standpoint. Certainly conservation tillage systems in some place it had been adopted for a long time, but there are a lot of other states in the southern region that had not adopted it like it has happened now. Bob Franz was still in charge of the weed science program at Arkansas, and there's many stories behind that. Alan York had just been named the outstanding young weed scientist for the Southern Weed Science Society, and propanil-resistant barnyard grass was probably the biggest resistance issue in the southern U.S. So things have certainly changed a lot, and certainly we're here in 2010. What I want to do quickly in this presentation is just give you an overview of a study that's been in place for 4 or 5 years now. There are 6 different states in the U.S. that are involved, and there's a group of certainly good weed scientists across that region that are looking at different programs to sustain weed management strategies using glyphosate systems, and also look at different programs and address key issues there. Now, Stanley Culpepper, who's here, he was harassing me the other day about how did we get to use the word benchmark study. And the only thing I could come up with is a lot of people overcompensate for Stanley when he's on the program, and we use some fancy names like benchmark study. But really, the idea behind that was is there's 6 states involved, and it's a very cooperative group that's trying to do very similar things in all those states to get a comprehensive strategy to managing resistance and also sustaining those programs. Now, I'm going to quickly go through a lot of things that have already been discussed in many presentations today. Many of you already know these things. Adoption of glyphosate-resistant crops has been unprecedented. We know that in agriculture, and certainly there have been many statistics shown about acceptance of cultivars and adoption of the technology. Certainly, we know that we can cause resistance to develop, and that is a key thing to consider in our programs. If we look at the glyphosate systems and resistant crops in general, many of our herbicides, and especially the glyphosate, is considered benign, but certainly there's some management issues and strategies that are making us change because of the selection pressure there. Going all the way back to 2005, which is not that long ago, one of the key things of this particular project was a large grower survey. And we learned a lot in that survey. And I know many of the states that are represented here today have done their own surveys and got specific information for their region and states. But in this larger survey, it looked like 30% of the farmers thought that GR weeds were or would become a serious problem. Only 30%. So that has certainly changed for a lot of people. A few of the farmers surveyed in 05 thought that tillage or some other non-GM crop included in the system would help or prevent weed resistance developing. And I think many farmers underestimated how quickly selection pressure would cause us to have resistance. And probably a lot of researchers and extension folks may have underestimated things a little bit too. I think many of you remember, I think in 2004, 2005 at the WSSA meeting in Hawaii, there was a session on resistance management, and it must have been Hawaii because very few people seemed to show up for that. And it was, but it was almost the sense that maybe this, we weren't going to have big issues that were going to show up. But certainly by 2010, it certainly is a big issue. So interesting to look back on just 5 years. So if you look at this particular study, one of the big goals was to develop and communicate clear recommendations, science-based, and certainly that's what all of us here are doing in these systems, not just the folks involved in the study. And then to certainly develop the proactive integrated approaches to managing glyphosate-resistant crops, not just the resistance component, but just make sure that those systems work well in general. So there's been a lot of discussion about weed resistance, and certainly Palmer amaranth has dominated the conversation probably at this meeting, but there certainly are other weeds that are very, very important. And I think since this slide was made, you could add one or two more weeds that we are certainly concerned about. And the ryegrass, for example, resistance would be one. A couple of things to consider. Glyphosate-based systems, generally speaking, have been perceived as simple and convenient. I think that's been mentioned by a lot of people, but I think with their adoption and use, it's become a little more complicated if you're not proactive on things, so that becomes important. The weed populations, one of the other things, too, is certainly there are some very key weeds that can drive the systems or the weed management program you have. But glyphosate, as we all know, is still controlling a lot of weeds in those fields. So it's very important trying to do things that sustain the glyphosate and make sure that we don't have dominant weeds like Palmer that minimize the effectiveness, say, of glyphosate on the other four or five or six weeds that might be in that particular field. And again, there certainly is the importance, again, of stewardship and maintaining those programs. Now, there's a couple of things, and some of these statements might be a bit controversial, but, you know, when you look at growers, in many cases, they've been fairly hesitant to be proactive in resistance management programs. I know many of you probably come from farm backgrounds. I do as well, and I'll talk about this to kinfolk, and they are slow to adopt things unless they absolutely have to. So that's been a challenge for a lot of folks in terms of getting some of that proactive strategies in place. One of the things that might be a little controversial with Stanley sitting here is number three. It talks about that given that in present production systems, alternatives to chemical weed control are essentially impractical. Now, Stanley's working on some deep tillage and cover crops, and I think that's being explored across the belt. So I'll be sure to pass that along, Stanley, to my colleagues on this. And again, one of the big concerns I think that a lot of folks have is that if problems continue to increase as they have for the last couple of years, will there be some type of regulatory intervention on programs? And I think no one really wants to go down that road. So certainly being proactive and ahead of time will be very important, as everyone in here knows. Now, so that's sort of the backdrop on that particular study. Again, it's a six-state study, multi-years. We've completed the fourth year of that study, and we've got an extension. We're going to go to a fifth year. And again, in just a little while, I'm going to go into the details on our continuous cotton results and how some of those results are panning out. But again, major objectives are to ensure the sustainability of the glyphosate systems, looking at the economics of those and other options that go along with that. Certainly everybody in here wants to deter evolution of resistant weeds because they can have a tremendous negative impact on our production systems. And I think at different meetings that many of y'all attend, other than the Beltwide, you've seen information on these studies, and I think we're into our fourth year going into the fifth year, and we're showing some positive things that I think we can use as educational tools to help people change some of their habits. And I think one of the real positive things is out of this work is it's large-scale farmer treatments. And I think when you're trying to convince the farming community to do things, we can show a lot of small plot research, but it, you know, usually people will adopt things if they have their peers, other farmers show success in different areas. Now, one of the things I want to mention here is that in this project, there was an original grower survey. There's a lot of information that's out there on the survey. And I think it provides a kind of a foundation that we can use to look at changes over time. Again, it's a multi-state project, several states up in the Midwest and upper Midwest. In the southern U.S. where cotton is involved, that would be North Carolina and Mississippi. We're in the process of doing a follow-up grower survey. And certainly as we collect the data from the studies, there'll be regional publications and extension publications that we'll get out, and hopefully that will help growers adopt technology or changes in their technology and use patterns to ensure that we minimize the development of resistance. And I will mention that we've already done some fact sheets that are associated with the project. Some of those are accessible in different places, but if anyone's interested in some of these benchmark short publications that mainly talk about the survey and adoption of technology, you're certainly welcome to ask me or others on the project. For example, one talks about just general concepts of sustainability, tillage practices, just quickly going through these, weed pressure and problem weeds, how they've changed over time with those systems, how herbicide use patterns have changed. And then finally, some of the comments from university weed scientists and grower awareness. So there's a lot of good information, I think, that you can use. Now, certainly there are a lot of you that are already gathering this information, maybe on a state level or more of a local level with other colleagues in other states. But this covers the Midwest and certainly some key states in the southern U.S. So with that, I'll ask if there's any questions on that brief overview. Okay, thanks.